On Daf Zayin Daf Ayin Dalid Omid Beis Ayin Dalid Omid Beis on the top of Kamav Varhesya. We've already established that for Shar Averos, other than the big three, you've got to give up your life Bifarhesya. What constitutes Bifarhesya? Omar Rav Yaakov Omar Rav Yochanan Ein Farhesya Pchusa Me'asar B'nei Adam. The minimum here is 10. Now, does it mean that you need all 10 to be present, actually there on the spot, or is it enough that they know about it? We'll see later in the sugya of Esther that you get the impression that people knew about it. That's enough to make it farhesia. However, although that's the shita of the Meiri, the Rambam Shita in Perek Hei Milchus Yisodei HaTorah seems to be that you need 10 people actually observing the episode in order to make it into Farhesia. Another issue which is raised by the Minchas Chinuch is whether or not the person himself who's called upon to violate the Torah and to give up his life if it's Befarhesia Al Kiddush Hashem, whether he is part of the minyan, or does he have to publicize it in front of 10? In other words, is it just the presence of the tzibur and he's part of the tzibur, or he needs to be mefarsimit, and to publicize it means to 10 other people, so he's not included in the minyan? Reminds us, of course, of the sugin ksubis, I believe it's on Daf Zayin, about Birchas Chasanim, and the chasan needs 10, is he included in the minyan? The Gemara has two opinions about that. Now, who are these 10 people? The Gemara says, Pshita Yisraelim be'inon. Certainly we need Jews. Dechsiv nikdashti betoch b'nei Yisrael. And the Pasuk here indicates that Kiddush Hashem is in front of b'nei Yisrael. And that's the Pasuk in Vayikra Chaf Beis. And Boy Rav Yirmiya Tisha Yisrael v'nochi echad mahu. Is it possible that 9 Jews and 1 non-Jew would be sufficient? In other words, when we require 10, does it mean that all 10 have to be Yisraelim or not? In other words, if Rabbi Yirmiya is operating with Svara, in other words, forget about the Makar, you know, the Alfusa from the Pasuk, then it would seem that a public sin is witnessed by 10 people, v'nikdashti b'toch b'nei Yisrael, that pasuk tells you that he doesn't have to give up his life to avoid sinning unless it be witnessed by Jewish people. But it could be a svara to say that maybe he has to give up his life in front of 10 people, even if some of the 10 people are Jewish, and even if one of the 10 is not Jewish. Again, would Rabbi Yirmiya have offered the possibility that if 6 are Jews and 4 are non-Jews, that itself would make it into Farhesia? I don't know. He only mentions the case of 9. Maybe he's just he doesn't want to go too far in this Chiddush, but he wants to get the owner, you know, the answerer, to agree to his fundamental principle that there's no absolute gzeiras hakasa that you need 10 Jews. You can apply svara over here. Now, the Gemara doesn't seem to wonder about women, Jewish women, whether they would constitute an asara, because if it's only a din of farhesia, so then nashim are considered farhesia as well. If it's a din of tzibur, like a dover shebe kedusha in tefillah, then you need 10 Yisraelim zecharim. So that's not clear. Toshma, the Gemara wants to answer Rabbi Yirmiya's question by saying the following. The Tani Rav Yanai, we have a brice of Rav Yanai, Achua de Rabbi Chia Bar Abba, the brother of Chia, he says, Asya toch toch, we have a Gzer Shava. And that Gzer Shava is going to teach that we need 10 Jews. Nothing less than 10 Jews will do. So we have a full-fledged Yalfusa here. It's not just a Svara. Ksiv Hoch, it says here, v'nikdashti b'toch b'nei Yisrael. Okay, so that's our pasuk in Vayikra Chaf Beis. And then we go back to the parsha of Korach Vadoso, that's in Bamidbar Tezayin, there it says, Uksiv Hosam Hibadlu Mitocha Eda Hazos, that Moshe Rabbeinu and the Tzaddikim should separate themselves from the group of Korach Vadoso, Mitoch Hadoso, Hibadlu Mitoch Hadoso, so that now Moshe urges the rest of the people of Israel who are not involved in the merit in the rebellion of Korach to separate from this congregation of Korach, so they shouldn't be included in the punishment that's going to be meted out to Korach Vadoso. Now we have another Gzeres Shava that teaches us that Eda refers to 10 people. And where is that other Gzeres Shava? That is in the parsha of the Meraglim. And there, the Eda Ra'azos is a reference to the 10 Meraglim that spoke Lashon Hara against Eretz Yisrael. So there we have the word Eda. So we know that Eda means 10. And now we have the Gzeres Shava from Eda in Parshas Korach, and the word mitoch in that pasuk of Ibadu mitoch Eda, and the word v'nikdashti betoch b'nei Yisrael. So we have Gzeres Shava toch toch. We also have Gzeres Shava Eda from the Eda of Korach to the Eda of the Meraglim, and that teaches us that Eda is 10. Yismael al Asar v'kul Yisrael. The Asar is made up exclusively of Jews. Afkan Asar v'kulo Yisrael. So basically, the answer to Rabbi Yirmiyah's question, based on Tani de Rabbi Yanai, is that we're going to take not one Gzeres Shava, but two Gzeres Shavas. The Gzeres Shava that's not quoted here to the Meraglim is in Megillah Daf Chaf Gimel Amid Beis. The second Gzeres Shava appears there in Megillah and here in Masechta Sanhedrin as well. The first Gzeres Shava links the Eda of Korach with the Meraglim, and therefore the word Eda means 10. The second Gzeres Shava that we find here as well links the Pasuk and the Mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem and Toch with the discussion following the rebellion of Korach, where it also says Toch, and just like by Korach it says Eda, so therefore by Kiddush Hashem we also require an Eda, which means the presence of 10 Jews. Now, are there deeper meanings here to the significance, A, of the number 10, B, of the fact that Kiddush Hashem, with regard to Shar Mitzvahs, requires an Eda? What is Eda? Is Eda different than Am? Is Kiddushas Hashem a communal experience in the case, a Kiyum Tzibur in the case of Shar Averos Chamuros? And I'm sorry, Shar Averos, is this a din that suspends the principle of a Chai Bohem, so that the Aver itself now will require Yeharig Val Yavar, because every Avera in and of itself should require Yeharig Val Yavar. The Matir is V'chai Bohem, but now, because of Kiddush Hashem, was suspending V'chai Bohem, or no? This is a separate mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. The Nafkamina would be if somebody doesn't live up to this requirement, and he violates an Avera in order to save his life, rather than give of his life in Farhesya. Does he get punished? Will he get Malkus for that Avera Salah? Does he have a shame rush, or is it just a bittul mitzvah? He gave up and violated the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. Does it remain a separate mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem? Or is it afka of the v'chai bohem that's matir him to violate an iser? But the bottom line is that in the presence of 10 Jews, he should allow himself to be killed, assuming these 10 people are Jewish, even for the avoidance of a regular classical lotus. That's a resolution of Rabbi Yirmiyah's suffix. Now we get to the sugi of Esther. Once we've decided that in a case of Farhesi, you have to give up your life even for Shara Veros, while Esther Farhesia Havi. Esther, having a relationship with Achashverosh, is an Avera Befarhesia. Now, again, here the Farhesia would seem to be like the Meiri would have had it, and that is that people know about it. So public knowledge is enough to generate Farhesia. There was no presence of 10 Jews. So again, why did Esther allow herself to have this relationship with Ahasuerus? Why didn't she give up her life rather than submit herself to him? And it's very interesting because Ahasuerus, of course, is a non-Jew, and nobody was there to witness the bia, the cohabitation of Ahasuerus with Esther, but everybody knew about it. The Jewish community kept it secret because Ahasuerus did not know that Esther was Jewish. But in effect, since everybody knew about it, as the Meiri says, it becomes public knowledge as if there were 10 people present. Now, the Rishonim here are worried about the fact that, according to at least one opinion, Esther was married to Mordechai, and therefore, in the case of Esther and Ahasuerus, this was a Yeharig Val Yavar under the law of Gilui Arayos. It should have nothing to do with Farhesia for Shara Averus. Why does the Gemara, analyzing and investigating the question of Esther living with Ahasuerus based on the din of Shara Averus for Farhesia, forget about Shara Averus for Farhesia, this is Gilui Arayos, unless this sugya reflects the shita that Mordechai was an uncle to Esther, but he was not married to Esther. Alternatively, maybe in the case of a married Jewish Eishes Ish having a relationship with another man who's not Jewish, that is not a Gilui Arayos which generates a Chiyuv Misa. And here we have the famous principle in Tosfos Divrei Maaskel V'ha, in the name of, I believe it's Rabbeinu Tam, that Zirmas Susim Zirmosim Ein Chayov Misal Be'ilas Ovid Kochavim Mishum Drachmona Afkere Lizare. Now exactly what this all means, and the Rashbam disagrees, whether it would be Gilui Arayos or not, maybe the Shita that Rabbeinu Tam is going to have to lead us to the conclusion that the Gemara knew its answer already in the question, but it thought that answer would only apply to Gilui Arayos and not to Shar Averos. Because Gilui Arayos, again, there's no V'chai Bahem, and perhaps if she's Karka Olam, then we don't have to worry about the Hafka V'chai Bahem. But if we're talking about a Kiddush Hashem, then whether she's Karka Olam or not is irrelevant, and all this hopefully will become clear as we see the sugya inside. Now again, I just want to mention, just so you know, which Rishonim hold what. The Ran and the Muki Yosef are of the opinion that our sugya assumes that Esther was an unmarried woman. She was not married to Mordechai. The Rivam in Tosfos says that even if you assume, like that man, the Yomer, that Esther was in fact married to Mordechai, however, he explains that a person must give up his life to avoid Gilui Arayos, even Bitzina, but not in the case when a person is passive. And the famous example of the Rivam is if they say to you, I'll throw you on a baby, you know, throw you off a three-story window or off the roof, and you'll kill the baby, you'll crush the baby to death, or if you refuse to do so, I'll kill you, then he's allowed to be passive and permit himself to be thrown off the roof. And since Esther, in this case, was totally passive, therefore, clearly, this is not called a Yeharig Val Yavar, a Chiv, to give up your life in order to avoid Gilui Arayos B'Karka Olam. Again, we have to explain why the Gemara thinks that with regard to Shara Veis B'Farhesia, the Svar of Karka Olam doesn't operate, it doesn't register. So in other words, if the only reason Esther would have to give up a life is because of Farhesia, B'Toras Shara Averos in this case, then the Gemara wants to understand, does Karka Olam apply as a mitigating circumstance with regard to Shara Veis B'Farhesia? and having a relationship with a guy, in this case a Jewish woman with a guy, that itself certainly would require would entail a violation of a lav, of a doraisa. And if even forgetting about Gilui Arayos, we would have here the halacha of Farhesi because everybody knew about it. Now, the very premise of the sugi here is that Esther was a very religious girl, and the story is eternalized in Tanakh. It must be that Esther was operating according to the strict requirements of the halacha. Now, if you notice, the Braisa says, Af nara murasa tehareg v'altavar. And we derived, if you recall, from the Gzeres Shava between Rotzeach and Nara Murasa, that for Gilui Arayos you have to give your life. Now, in the case of the Pasuk of Nara Murasa, we're talking about a rape situation. That would seem to be Karka Olam. And nevertheless, the Gemara says, because of the equation to Rotzeach, she, the Nara Murasa, would have to give up her life rather than submit herself to that Maisa, even though she's Karka Olam. Now, in terms of Nara Murasa, where, based on the equation to Rotzeach, she has to give up her life, there's another girsa that Tosus mentions here that says, not Tehoreg Val Tavar, but Yehoreg Val Yavar, which is referring to the Boel and not to the Nevelis. In any event, there's a very interesting Bira Gura in Yoredeya who wants to suggest that this whole story about Achashverosh is a Shas Gzeres Malchus, because Achashverosh's officers were forcing the beautiful girls in the kingdom to join his harem, and in such times a person has to give up his life rather than violate any mitzvah. So if that be the case, the entire discussion here about Gilui Arayos is not so relevant here. Forget about Gilui Arayos and even forget about Shar Averos, just simply Shas Gzeres Malchus, that's enough. Those who disagree with the Bira Gura would obviously argue that this decree was not directed against the Jewish population, and therefore that's not called Gzeres Malchus. Anyway, now we want to study the two answers given by Rava, by Abai and Rava, respectively, to this question about Esther and the fact that it was Farhesia. So Abai's answer is Esther Karka Olam Hoysa, that since in her relationship with Achashverosh she was passive, therefore she doesn't have to give up her life for the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. She didn't actively participate in the bia, in the cohabitation. And the equation here, the mashal of the soil of the earth, is just like the soil of the earth is totally passive. People cultivate it, they plant, and so forth. Esther was completely passive when Achashverosh was intimate with her. Since she didn't actively participate in the relationship, therefore, there's no chiv of Kiddush Hashem for Shar Averos b'Farhesia. Now, she could have resisted Achashverosh, and that would have been at the pain of death, but on the other hand, she did not actually actively perform a Mais Avera b'Farhesia, and that's not considered Chil Hashem. And therefore, if the Mechayev here is Chil Hashem, then that would not apply in the case of Esther because she was Karka Olam. Now, we mentioned the Rivam in Tosus. According to the Rivam, Abaye, in the case of a married woman, he's not necessarily teaching that she's allowed to passively submit herself to a Bia if she's an Eishes Ish, because that would be Gilui Arayos. He's only saying that in the case of a guy, that makes it into Shar Averos, and therefore it all depends upon the public knowledge of the action. This is according to Abai. Rav Amar Hanos Atzman Shaini. Rava says that when do we say that you have to give up your life al Kiddush Hashem for Shar Averos b'far Hesia? That's only if it's lavure al das, if the person who's forcing you to violate the Torah is interested just in that, in your violation of the Torah law. But if it's just his own personal pleasure in life, and of course in the case of Achashverosh, he didn't even know that Esther was Jewish, so the only motivation here is his own hanah, in such a case, the halacha of shara veris befarhesia doesn't apply. And again, this comes back to our discussion earlier that in the case of shara veris, it's not the chumras havera that generates the kiddush Hashem, but rather the kiddush Hashem per se. That a person makes a decision that he'd rather violate the Torah in order to save his life. When he puts these two on the scale, his life and the Torah law, he tips the scale in favor of his life. That's Chil Hashem. But that only applies if the issue here is violating the Torah. If it has nothing to do with violating the Torah, then that's going to be a straightforward case of Shara Veris, and we apply the principle of V'chai Bohem. So again, Farhesi, according to Rava, does not absolutely generate a Chil Hashem. It all depends upon the motivation of the Ma'anis, the one who's forcing the Jew. If he was doing it publicly and forcing him because he wanted him to violate Jewish law, that generates Chil Hashem. But if, on the other hand, his interest is only in Hanas Atzmo, then there's no relevance here of Chil Hashem. And again, we're talking about Shara Averis, where V'chai Bohem certainly applies to be mat to the Avera. Now, what's unclear in this sugi is the relationship between Rava as the second answer of the Gemara and Abaye as the previous answer. Did Rava completely reject Abaye and therefore he came forward with a second answer? Or would Rava, in theory, in general, accept the halachic principle of Karkol if he just feels that it's irrelevant in this case, even if you would have argued that Esther might have actively participated, since it's Hanas Atzman, there is no Machayev of Kiddush Hashem. Another issue regarding Rava is, what would Rava say about the Gimel Averis Chamuros? In such a case, would Hanas Atzman be a mitigating factor? Many Rishonim would say that yes, that even with regard to the Averis Chamuros, a person is allowed to save his life and violate the Averis Chamuros if the Ma'anis is only motivated and forcing him to do so because of personal desire. Esther, therefore, was allowed to submit herself to Achashverosh even if you assume she was married to Mordechai. And the reason for this is because Hanas Atzman Shaini, and that mitigates even Gili Arayis. However, many Rishonim disagree, and they hold that with regard to the Gimel Averis Chamuros, including, of course, Gili Arayis, there is no mitigating factor called Hanas Atzman Shaini, because, again, it's the Chumras Avera per se that suspends the operation of V'chai Bohem. And if that be the case, there's no heter to violate these three Averos, B'chol Nafshecha, etc., even for the sake of saving one's life. Rava now proves his principle. He says, Nilo Temach, if you don't agree with me, Hani Kvake Vidimonike, these are various types of trees and so forth that were worshipped by the idol worshippers, and the Jews were selling them. Or in certain cases the Goyim would force them to fork them over. Is Hechi Avina Lehu? What's the heter to allow us to give these objects to the Goyim for the sake of worship, for the sake of idol worship? After all, Avodah Zorah is one of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, and by offering them the wherewithal of violating this Isur of idolatry, that's a serious violation. And it should require Kiddush Hashem. We should have to be willing to give up our lives rather than give them what they're asking for. Their priests come along to collect these various objects. Now, I had suggested that these were trees that were used in idol worship. Rashi says it's klina choshes, shenosim v'em gecholim. So these were various kinds of copper utensils that were used in the avodah of Avodah Zorah. They would put gecholim, coals, into these utensils. Omdim l'thay shulcham alachim l'schamim kenegdom. And they would use this in their temples in the context of idol worship to warm up the place. And the Parsim especially, the Persians had a certain celebration, a Yom Chag, a certain holiday, and their priests would take these kelim from the Jews in order to light up their houses of worship in their temples. And that would allow the Jewish people to warm them. I'm sorry, that would allow the idol worshipers to warm themselves. How were the Jews able, halachically permitted, to give them the wherewithal to worship Avodah Zarah? And the Ponovitch Rav is very famous for deriving from this that Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Michshel, if you help or facilitate someone to violate a crime, then you are considered a participant in that crime, and therefore this is a crime of Avodas Kochavim. The Jews would have to be Moser Nefesh and be willing to, at the cost of life, to give up their lives for the sake of avoiding this. The only answer that could justify the custom amongst Jews is Hanos El Hanos Asman Shiny, that the Goyim were not asking the Jewish people to violate, and by the Jewish people selling or providing these kelim, they're not desecrating the name of God. This is not a Chil Hashem. It's Hanos Atzman Shani, and that means that the priests were only doing this in order to provide Chachanami Hanos Atzman Shani. We could apply this rule to Esther's situation and say that she did not have to give her life because Achashverosh was motivated for his own pleasure, and therefore there's no Chil Hashem. So again, what we're talking about in this sugya of kvake v'dimonike is that if, let's say, threats are made to the Jewish people to facilitate the idol worship of the goyim, is that called chil Hashem if we submit ourselves to those threats? According to the sugya, in the case of the Persian priests, they wanted these heating devices from the Jews for their own services, for their own purposes. That's what they had to do. They had to provide heat for the idol worship, for the temples. But they weren't trying to force the Jewish people to violate Jewish law, and therefore it doesn't come under Chil Hashem. That's called Hanos Atzman Shiny. And the Gemara seems to clearly indicate that there was no question about the halachic permissibility of the Jews to offer the heaters to the goyim, and that would not come under the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem and Yehorik Val Yav. The Ozda Rava Lataime Rava is very consistent. The Amar Rava Ovi Kochavim the Amar Leilahai Yisrael. If a goy tells a Jew, "Ktol Asafta B'Shabsa." Cut some aspasta. Aspasta is the early growth of the grains, even before it reaches full maturation. It's only one third, and this was used for animal fodder. The guy, the idol worship, says to the Jew, on Shabbos, I want you to cut this aspasta, which is called the Meleches Ktsira, and that would involve a violation of the Shabbos, and Shadi lechevasa, and give it or throw it over to the animals to feed them. Ve'ilo, and if you don't do that, katil nalach, I'll kill you. Is in such a case as Rava, since it's Shar Averis, it's not one of the Gimel Averis Chamurus, liktol velo liktole. He should cut down the aspasta rather than allow himself to be killed. This is Hanos Atzman Shiny. So Rava is very very consistent, and if there's no Chil Hashem because Hanos Atzman Shiny, he doesn't have to give up his life. Shteina Nahara. Now here's another scenario. What if the idol worshiper says, cut some aspasta and throw it into the river or I'll kill you? And in this case, by throwing it into the river, obviously the Oved Avodah Zarah gets no benefits. So you can't apply the principle Hanos Atzman Shiny. Is liktol velo liktol. In such a case, Rava paskins that he should allow himself to be killed rather than cut the aspasta on Shabbos, and that means that we attribute to the goy hamaanis the motivation that he wants to get the Jew to violate the Torah. That would be Chil Hashem. Now, Rashi goes into a long discussion here about the case of Rava. Is he discussing a case of an idol worshiper who demands that a Jew sin publicly? Or does the Eidei Rishuvim make his demands during a period of Gzeiras Malchus? So we're trying to set up here a chiyuv according to Rava of Kiddush Hashem Yehorik Val Yavar, and you can set that up under one of two conditions. Either the demand that was being made was in public, or alternatively, the demand was being made even in private, but during a period of Gzeiras Malchus. And my time of the Gemara explains why does Rava insist that he has to give up his life in these cases? La bure milsa kaboy. Clearly, the guy is interested in having the Jew violate his Torah law, and therefore would be a chil Hashem if the Jew would kowtow to the desire of the guy. He has to give up his life for that, and that takes on the din of Shara Veres Befarhesia, or alternatively, Gzeiras Malchus, as Rashi suggests. Now, the Gemara established that a Jew has to give up his life for the sake of Kiddush Hashem. What about a Ben Noach? Boy, me name of Yami, Ben Noach mitzuv al Kiddush Hashem, or Eda mitzuv al Kiddush Hashem? Does a Ben Noach have to give up his life for one of the seven mitzvahs, B'nai Noach, if he's being threatened that he'll be killed unless he violates one of the seven mitzvahs, B'nai Noach? And offhand, the Gemara is very difficult here because the Machayev here is Kiddush Hashem. We never found that Kiddush Hashem is a mitzvah for B'nai Noach. The Torah addresses Klal Yisrael. And if you take a look carefully at Tosus here on the bottom of the page, Ben Noach, it seems that the Havamina here, that a Ben Noach is obligated to give his life, is because there's no heter of a Chai Bohem. In the case of a Jew, there's a matir of a Chai Bohem. So for the sake of saving his life, he can violate his mitzvahs. But in the case of a guy, who says that there's v'chai b'hem, that for the sake of saving the non-Jewish life, we're going to allow the non-Jew to violate his seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach? Or shall we say no, that the mitzvah here is not because of the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach in and of themselves, the severity of the aver and the violation thereof, but rather because of Kiddush Hashem. And Kiddush Hashem is not a mitzvah that was incumbent upon or imposed upon the b'nei Noach. Amar Abaye Toshma, his proof is from the famous price of seven mitzvahs nitztav b'nei Noach. There are seven and only seven mitzvahs that a ben Noach is chayef. And v'im Isa, if you're going to assume that Kiddush Hashem is on the list, then tam nehavi, it should have said in the price there are eight mitzvahs. And basically, we could argue in the context of Abaye two principles. Number one, Abaye is not looking at the chomer avera; he's looking at Kiddush Hashem. And number two, Abaye understands that this list of seven mitzvahs is exhaustive. He did not adduce the proof from the pasuk itself, which says "v'nikdashti b'tok b'nei Yisrael" or "bechol nafshecha," which addresses the Jewish nation and not the nations of the world. But the bottom line is that Abaye was medayik from the lashon abraisa that there is no eighth mitzvah that a ben Noach is obligated in. Amalei Abaye dismisses this argument of Abaye. Rava, excuse me, dismisses the argument of Abaye. Inu v'chol avizrayu. The B'nai Noach are obligated in seven mitzvahs and all avizrayu of these seven mitzvahs. And here the Kiddush Hashem is an extension of the mitzvah itself. It would seem pashtus that Rava is coming back to the Havamina that Tosfos spells out that the v'chai bohem only applies to a Yisrael, and therefore not B'Torah's Kiddush Hashem is a separate independent mitzvah, but Kiddush Hashem here is only a Gili Milsa. It reveals that the Aver itself is not subject to any Matir of V'chai Bahem, and therefore B'nai Noach are obligated to observe all the Sheva Mitzvahs, and there's no matir for any one of the seven mitzvahs. So even though the Ben Noach is being threatened by death, if he doesn't commit one of these averas, he has to give up his life. And again, I doubt if according to Rava he has any kium of mitzvahs Kiddush Hashem in that case, but nevertheless, he's not allowed to violate the will of God. In the note over here, he tells us that the word avizrayu means spices. You know, the spices are something that expand or enhance the flavor of a tavshil. And it's not a tavshil, it's not the gufa, the meichel, it's not the food itself. And here Av Yisrael means mitzvahs that come to embellish, strengthen, and expand other mitzvahs. So, for example, in the case of Kiddush Hashem, the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem comes to expand and define the Sheva mitzvah Neinot, that there's no v'chai b'hem. The Gemara asks, my hafilah, what's the bottom line? How do we paskin? Is it ben ochayef or not? We had a machlokas here between Abai and Rava. Generally, we always paskin like Rava against Abaye, but the Gemara here quotes Amri Beirav, that already Omer Avad Barav Omer Barav, back in the time of Rav, it's way before an Abai Rava Ksiv, it says, L'adover hazeh yislach Hashem li'avdecha. So that Naaman tells Elisha, and this is in Melachim Beis, he was the leader of Aram, he was the general, I should say, of Aram, and he had come down with the terrible disease of Tzaras. And he asked what to do. They told him to, you know, nothing was helping him. They asked him, they told him, they encouraged him to go ask Elisha, what should he do? And Elisha instructed Naaman through Gehazi that he should dip himself in the Jordan River 7 times. At first, Naaman laughed at it, but then at the end, he followed this advice, and he had a miraculous salvation from Tzaras. Now, at this point, Naaman completely gave up idol worship, and he asked from God, forgive him for one thing. Because when he was accompanying the king of Aram to the temple of Rimon, Naaman would be forced to bow down before the idol because he was a supporter of the king. And this prostration in front of the idol was considered support of the king. So he says, L'dover hazeh yislach Hashem li'avdecha, please, God, forgive me for this. Bevor Adoni beis Rimon l'shtachvo shomavu nishan al yodi v'shtachavisi, which literally translates, he leans on my arm and I shall bow down too. In other words, I have to bow down together with the king to this idol. Ksiv vayomer lo lech l'shalom. And Elisha said, go in peace, meaning apparently it was permissible, it was mutter, for Naaman to worship the idol, in this case by bowing down. And now we turn to Daf Ayin Hey Amud Aleph. V'im Isa. And now if you assume that it's really true that a Ben Noach has to be Makadish Shem Shamayim and choose death over idolatry is lo lemole, then why would Elisha Novi have given Naaman permission and say Lech L'Sholom and approve of the action? On the contrary, he should have told him that he has to give up his life. From the fact that Elisha didn't tell Naaman, you have to give up your life, we have to conclude that a Ben Noach is not obligated in the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. And the Gemara rejects this proof by saying, Ha Bitzina, Ha Befaresia. The case of Naaman was Bitzina. It was in private. And therefore that doesn't generate a Chil Hashem, but Ha Befaresia. But the question of whether a guy is Chayev in Kiddush Hashem applies in public. So in other words, the distinction between Tzina and Farhesia, which in the case of Yisrael, as far as Kiddush Hashem is only relevant to Shar Averos, because with regard to three Averos Chamuros, there is no difference between public and private. Even in private, you have to give up your life. That's not true, apparently, in this sugya. In the case of Ben Noach, even with regard to the basic Averos, like Avodah Zorah, there's going to be a distinction between private and public. And therefore, if there is no presence of 10 Jews, then this is not called Chil Hashem, and therefore the guy is not obligated in Kiddush Hashem. So when Naaman bowed down together with his king, he might have been observed by members of Aram, but there were no 10 Jews that were spectators here. Therefore, Naaman is allowed to bow to the idol because it's a case of Farhesia. Now again, this distinction I want to reemphasize between Tzina and Farhesia is only relevant to Naaman as a Ben Noach. In the case of a Jew, he would be enjoined from worshipping an idol even in private. He would have to give up his life. So what exactly is the Gemara's final conclusion? What's the Maskana? You get the impression that according to our Sugya, the final Maskana is that a Ben Noach is, in fact, mechuyev in Kiddush Hashem, and he has to be willing to give up his life rather than violate Chil Hashem. But that only applies in the case of Farhesia. That Shita is recorded here in the Chidushi Aran. Rabbi Yonah, on the other hand, says that the original question, the Safik in the Gemara, remains, Teiku, remains unresolved, and the Raya that Ben-Noch doesn't have to give up his life is rejected. There's no proof one way or the other. Tosus, on the other hand, has a slightly different gears than Agamar, and the Gemara clearly comes to the Maskon, according to Tosfos, that a Ben-Noch is not obligated to give up his life in order to be Mekadesh Shem, Shem Hashem. Now let's go back to remind ourselves of the Sugya on Daf Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph. The Gemara taught that a person has to sacrifice himself rather than violate Gili Arayis and have a relationship with an Erva. An incident in a man had a certain sexual desire, very intense, profound lust and desire to have to see a woman. Hela libotina, his heart was so obsessed with this idea, he became ill. Bo v'sholu l'rofim. And they asked the psychiatrist what to do in this case. His life is in jeopardy. Amru lo, ein lo takana ad shetiboel. It would seem that his only salvation would be if he actually had a relationship with this woman. But amru chacham yomus v'al tiboel lo. Better that he should die rather than have a relationship with her. And the Gemara is going to have to explain what was the nature of this Isur? Why was she an Erva to him? And then the Gemara says the following, that is there perhaps another way that we can quiet down his Yetzirah and save his life without violating Gila Reis? Tavod lefon of Aruma. Maybe if she stands naked in front of him, that would appease him, that would be enough. The Gemara says again, Yomus v'al tamod lefon of Aruma. And we don't know if this is an exception to the rule, or the Gemara is saying this as a rule. If it's an exception to the rule, it's because the Dar, the generation, was light and suspect to violating this kind of promiscuity. Or maybe this is called Avizrai de Gili Arayis. The Gemara goes on and say, okay, if we cannot permit her to stand naked in front of him, then to Sapri Imo Me'achori Agoder, let her at least stand on the other side of the fence and speak to him. Maybe that would calm him down somehow. The Gemara says, unbelievable, Yomus Velo to Sapri Imo Me'achori Agoder. Now clearly this cannot be Mikra Din. What violation is there for a woman to speak to a man from the other side of the fence? So now we have to know exactly what's going on in this case. There are obviously some facts and figures that we're missing here. Number one, was she an Erva? That's first and foremost. And on that, the Gemara records a debate. Bligi ba Rabbi Yaakov bar Idi, Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Chad Omer Eishes Ishaisa. So according to one opinion, clearly we're dealing with an Erva Doraisa of Eishes Ish. She was a married woman. And Chadomer Pnuya Haisa, but the other man, the Omer, says she wasn't even married. And that's going to be an issue here because Gili Arayis doesn't apply in the case of an unmarried woman. Bishleim Laman, the Omer, Ashes, Ish Haisa, Shapir. We understand that this is an issue of Yehareg, Val Yavar, to avoid cohabitation with an Erev of an Ashes Ish. And perhaps even Avizrayu de Gili Arayis. For example, gazing at her if she's naked or talking to her, maybe that's also, if it's for the sake of deriving pleasure, that's also a kind of avizrayu degili arayis. But el laman diomer pnuyais, if you assume she was unmarried, maikuli hai, I don't understand any of these requirements to demand that he give up his life. What's the avera here? What's the erva? And the Rapapa gives the answer, mishum pgam mishpacha, that this would be, if we translate this Gemara literally, a disgrace to the family. Now, once the Gemara has established that we're not talking about an Eishes Ish, then the concept of Avizrayu Degila Rice is no longer relevant. If you want to talk about Avizrayu, you can take a look at the Pasuk, Isha Betumas Nidosalo Sikrivu. You're not allowed to even approach and come close to a woman. That's already, kissing and hugging and being alone in one room. All this becomes Avizrayu Degila Rice. But if we're talking about a Pnuya, then we're not dealing with Arayas at all. There's no Eishes Ish over here. Again, you have to add the caveat that there was no Nidus over here. But the family would be disgraced if one of its members acted in an immoral way with some element of promiscuity. And the Chazal ruled that in this case the man should rather die than create some sort of disgrace for the family. Now, it's interesting that all the emphasis here is shifted from the woman herself over to her family. She, in advance, having compassion on this man, might have forgiven the man for any disgrace he was bringing upon her in order to save his life. But she has no rights to forgive him at the expense of her relatives, who would suffer this kind of a disgrace to the family. And Rav Acha Braid Rav Ikomer, he has a slightly different approach over here. Kidei Shelo Yu Bnos Yisrael Prutzos Barayis. We're talking about a separate takana that we have to beef up our emphasis on tznius, and we have to be, shall we say, zero tolerance with regard to immodest behavior and anything that has to do with intimacy. And Chazal did not want a Jewish woman to act in such a way, show off her physical beauty to a man, and even if she's not married, but, if a man comes with a proposal and it's indecent to avoid that, again, with this takana to protect the Tara, the purity of the Jewish community, Chazal decreed that the man should not even be allowed to gaze at this woman, and this woman is not married, even though this gazing perhaps would save his life. And that's how far the Chazal went in order to guarantee, in matters of intimacy, the modest behavior of the Bnos Yisrael. Now again, what we have to do here is open up a sugya in Yevamos to see what powers, extra judiciary powers, are invested in Beis Din that they can make this takana and allow someone to die, even though technically, according to Halacha, he's not Chayev Misa, he's not even Chayev in Yehorg Val Yava. The Gemara, however, really raises a different question. If she was unmarried, why didn't the man just marry her? Then he could have a heter bia, kidasu kidin, and that certainly would have cured him and saved him from dying without any sort of embarrassing or immodest behavior on the part of the woman. So why not suggest marriage in this case? And the Gemara answers, Lo miyasve daite, a very profound psychological principle here, that this would not, if he would have married her, this would not have settled down his mind and conned him on a psychological level, and marriage would not have satisfied his desire, and he would remain a chola misukon, a dangerously ill person. So the Gemara explains, Kid Rabbi Yitzchak, the Yom Rabbi Yitzchak, Miyom Shechar Beis HaMikdash Nitla Tam Bia V'nitna Li'ovdei Avodah Zarah Li'ovrei Avera Shenemar Mayim Gnuvim Taku V'lechem Sesarim Yin'am. So this is a pasuk in Mishlei which basically teaches us that sometimes a person has an insatiable desire to violate the Torah. The desire itself that overwhelms him is a result of the fact that it's a dover asur, that he's doing something that's prohibited. That's called mayim gnuvim, stolen waters, yimtaku are sweet. And the pleasure that he would derive is because she's not married to him, dafka. She is a pnuya. And what happened here after, according to Rav Yitzchak's formulation, after the Migdash was destroyed, the Yom Rav Yitzchak miyom shechar beis migdash nitla tam bia v'nitna li'ovrei avera. In other words, the special pleasure of intimacy was taken away as a result of the destruction of the temple. The Jewish people were sent into Golus, and as a result, they were beset by such terrible anti-Semitism, and they were so subjugated, they had no energy, they had no excitement as far as intimacy is concerned. And the only ones who remained in that state of desire of taiva for illicit relation is only someone who has illicit relations, prohibited relations. And therefore, in this case, the only way of saving his life would be to do it in a way of mayim gnuvim, as some sort of an intimacy which is illegal rather than marry her. Hadron Olecha Perek Ben Sorumor. Now we get to the Elu Hein HaNisrafim. Let's just take a look at the Mishnah. We have in the previous Prakim Mishnais that deal with Skila. We had the laws of Ben Sorumorer. The Mishnah now wants to discuss other Misos Bezdin. We'll start with Sreifa, which is the most severe form of Misas Bezdin. That's Gemara back on Daf Mem Tes Amid Beis. And the Elu Hein HaNisrafim. Who are those who are chayev this particular Misas Bezdin of Sreifa? And the first one is Habal Isha Ubita. If a man has a relationship with a woman and her daughter, Ubas Kohen Shezinsa, the daughter of a Kohen who got married and now she has an adulterous relationship with another man, that itself is a Chiv Sreifa. Yesh Bechal Isha Ubita, also included in the Chiv Sreifa is the case of a man who has a relationship with a woman and her daughter, Bito Bas Bito, or a relationship with his daughter and his daughter's daughter, meaning his granddaughter, or Bas Beno, or his son's daughter, Ubas Ishto, Bas Bito, Bas Beno. These are all relatives which engender a Chiyuv Sreifa, Betoras and Erva Chamura, Chamoso, Vim Chamoso, Vim Chamiv, his mother-in-law, his mother-in-law's mother, his father-in-law's mother, all these are enumerated here in the Mishnah as severe violations of Gilui Arayos. This first case on the list of Habal Isha Ubita, the Gemara is going to discuss how to interpret this, and we could make a mistake that we're talking about a case of a man who marries a woman and then has a relationship with her daughter, but the truth is just the opposite. The sequence is the opposite. A man marries a woman and has a relationship with her mother. That's the Iser of Aim Ishto, which means the mother of his wife, his mother-in-law. Now, in the case of a Bas Kohen, who is guilty of Arayos, and she suffers Sreifa, it means, in contrast to a regular Bas Yisrael, who's not a Bas Kohen, and she commits adultery, she'll be punished with Chenek, and that's a sugya later on. Now, in the case of the Boel who committed adultery with a Bas Kohen, he's not Chayev in Sreif, he's only Chayev in Chenek. Now, in the case of a Baal Ishto, Baal Isha Ubita, the Mishnah doesn't quote the Pasuk. And we're not saying that in the case of Isha Ubita that we're going to derive their punishment from this Pasuk. We're going to have to derive the Azar from one Pasuk and the punishment from a different pasuk. In the case, for example, of Isha Ubita, the Mishnah says Yesh Bechal Isha Ubita, included in this category of a woman and her daughter is Bito Ubas Bito. Included therein, that means that we could derive from Baal Isha U Bita, the onesh for Bito Ubas Bito, but not the Asar itself. Every Erva case requires its own Asar in the Torah. And ain't on Shemel Kemasir, there must be an Asar in the Torah, but as far as the punishment is concerned, Yesh Bechal Isha Bito, Bito Ubas Bito. Now, are we talking about a case when it says Bito Ubas Bito? What exactly is the case? Because Lechora, if the man is married, then his daughter comes under the next category listed in the Mishnah, which is Bas Ishto. It must be a case of a daughter that he had through a relationship other than with his own wife. Otherwise, this category of Bito is not a separate category. It would come under Bas Ishto. Why does Mishnah have both Bito and Bas Ishto as two separate categories? Okay, Rabbosai, that's the Mishnah. And the sugya of that analyzes this Mishnah is going to come up in the next year, Mirtz Hashem, so we'll stop here.